This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 252 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. I can guarantee that there are a handful of listeners who roll their eyes anytime I talk about regression. I've gotten the feedback before. There are people out there who consume fantasy content who think claiming regression to the mean is some sort of cop-out answer to a problem. But it's not. It's a very, very real thing. When something happens that's out of the ordinary, we shouldn't expect that thing to continue. If I'm out golfing and get two birdies on consecutive holes when I'm a low 90s golfer, I don't expect to play birdie golf the rest of the way. I expect to get my typical bogey or double bogey on the next hole because that's how I typically play. I'm expecting regression. Regression's a really important topic in fantasy football for a ton of reasons. At the season-long level, a lot of fantasy managers look at previous season statistics to make current season projections. But in doing so, they don't always realize what was sustainable and what wasn't sustainable by a team or a player. It's an important thing to look at in season as well. I mean, this is why I have articles and podcasts on players to buy and sell. If a player in the middle of a season is doing something that he likely can't keep doing, then you need to recognize that. And it brings forth a transaction opportunity because the rest of your league might not recognize it. So over the next 3 weeks on the Late Round Podcast, I'm going to be talking about regression because I think it's important to. I'm starting today with team-level regression, and then next week will be negative regression candidates, with the week after that being positive regression candidates. Before digging in, I wanted to send another reminder about FanDuel's new 3-man MLB challenge. Some nights you just don't have time to put in all the research to compete in daily fantasy baseball. You just want to crank out a lineup and enjoy the game. Well, with the 3-man MLB challenge, you can just pick 3 hitters for the night, and the only stats that count are hits, homers, and runs batted in. To give it a shot, check out the FanDuel lobby today. I would strongly argue that in fantasy football circles, there's not enough talk about team-level regression. It's often pretty easy to find analysis on individual players who scored at a higher rate than they should have, or players who did some unsustainable things from an efficiency standpoint. But it starts at a higher level than that. It starts at the team level. My projections are built at that team level first, and then it gets to the individual level. You need to project the number of plays a team is going to run, for instance, before you assign market share numbers to individual players. Otherwise, what's a 20% target share actually mean when you don't know what that 20% is taking from? When I go through my process of looking at team-level offensive projections, I'm not just taking a team's pass-to-rush attempt ratio from the previous season and assuming that it'll be the same the following year. I'm not just saying this team scored this many touchdowns last year, so they'll score the same number this year. Because team-level statistics, and team-level statistics that are really important for fantasy football, they regress. And we can use that knowledge to better project how these teams are going to perform in the current season. Now, there are two main buckets that I tend to look at when analyzing team-level regression. The first is touchdowns and how they were scored. Teams can overperform and underperform in the touchdown column, and I'll explain how and why in a minute. And then there's just general play calling, or pass-to-rush attempt ratio. Teams who are really, really pass-heavy 1 year aren't automatically pass-heavy the next, so I'll talk about that as well. Let's start with touchdowns, though. There are a ton of ways to look at touchdown regression, but I try to keep those ways pretty simplistic on this podcast so that it's easily understood. It's easily digestible. That's generally why I go with touchdowns versus yards. And I do this at the player level as well, not just the team level. But this is the team regression podcast, so let's take a look at that. Over the last 8 NFL seasons, so since 2011, which is usually where I relate all my data to because that was a big turning point for NFL offenses. But since 2011, we've seen an R-squared value of nearly 0.7 when comparing cumulative team yards offensively with total touchdowns scored. It's a pretty strong correlation for football purposes. So what that means is, when a team is really far away from that expectation, we can generally expect that team will regress. Let's look at the low end of that first, the San Francisco 49ers from 2018. Last year, the 49ers had 5,769 passing and rushing yards. That was the 16th most in football. But they also had just 33 touchdowns, tying them for the 8th fewest. If you look at how a team has historically performed with that many yards, San Francisco should have had 7 more touchdowns than they did last year. Adjusting that for 2018's offensive surge, and you're still at more than 5 touchdowns. A big reason for this was because 17.1% of San Francisco's drives ended in a turnover last season. That was the second highest rate in the league behind only Tampa Bay. So they were gaining yards, but they weren't scoring. I think this does go to show how good Kyle Shanahan is as an offensive mind, considering the pieces that he was working with. It's very easy to see this San Francisco offense as one that has a chance to really break out this year. That might not be a hot take, but with question marks around the entire depth chart, throwing darts at those players in fantasy drafts makes sense. Other than George Kittle, they're all fairly inexpensive to acquire. I'll definitely be talking about more of them in the other regression podcasts. Now, the other offense on this side of the spectrum, on the should-have-scored-more-touchdowns side of things, is Oakland. Oakland should have had almost the same uptick in touchdowns as San Francisco had last season. They scored 5 fewer overall touchdowns because the offense was terrible, but the Raiders should have still had 5 more than they had. What makes them intriguing, then, is not only will the offense be better given the offseason additions that they made, but the offense just should have been better than it was last year. Does that make Derek Carr a late-round quarterback target? No, I don't think so. But he should be a streamer. And you should note that he had just a 3.4% touchdown rate last year when his career average was 4.4%. Now, please don't take this as me saying that I'm super bullish on the Raiders' offense. I'd rather throw darts at San Francisco's, but at least be ready for a rebound from Derek Carr. And it won't just be Antonio Brown-based. It's going to be regression-based. Now, there are 3 teams that I want to talk about who have the opposite problem as Oakland and San Francisco. Let's kick things off with Seattle. Put me in the category of someone who doesn't think what they did last season was sustainable at all. And no, it's not just because I'm against a run-heavy offense. It's because the things that I see point to what they did last season not being sustainable at all. The Seahawks scored 50 touchdowns last year on offense. That was well above the league's average. They ranked 6th. But they also had the 18th most yards in the league offensively. That's a recipe for regression. And you can see that just by looking at Russell Wilson's touchdown rate, which was 8.2%. His career rate is just 6%. 6% is good, but it's not 8.2% good. Now, I'll be talking about Seattle again in a second regarding their play calling, but unless NFL offenses take another big leap in 2019, I'm fading the hope that they reach 50 touchdowns again on offense. Given their yardage total, they scored over 11 more touchdowns than they should have last year. That was the 3rd largest difference in the league. The 2 teams who overperformed in the touchdown column most in 2019 aren't much of a surprise. At least one of them isn't, and that's Kansas City. The Chiefs, according to their yardage total, posted over 12 more touchdowns than they should have last year. But you don't really need me to tell you that expecting Patrick Mahomes to throw 50 touchdowns again isn't a good idea. We know why the Chiefs overperformed. And this doesn't mean that we shouldn't expect Kansas City to no longer have this top offense. It's just that if you look at the 4 other teams who outperformed their touchdown total by 10 or more since 2011, those teams dropped their touchdown totals the following year by 14, 17, 16, and 14. So Kansas City can and probably will still be over the 50 touchdown mark. It's just not likely they'll come close to the 66 offensive touchdowns that they had in 2018. And then there's New Orleans. The Saints were actually the biggest overperformers in touchdowns last season, not Kansas City. New Orleans had 59 touchdowns, which was the 2nd most in the league, despite finishing 8th in yards. The Saints were 2nd in the NFL in touchdown rate per drive, where they scored a touchdown on over 38% of their drives. That's insane. And since 2011, of the 17 teams with a touchdowns per drive rate north of 29%, and this excludes last season because we don't have next season data for last year's teams, but of the 17 teams with a touchdowns per drive rate north of 29%, every single one of those teams saw a decrease in touchdown rate the following season. You can look at the 49 teams who scored a touchdown on 25% or more of their drives and see the same thing. Just 5 of those 49 teams saw an increase in rate the following season. Because regression. You may say, well, look at New Orleans in 2017 to 2018. And you're not wrong. They were one of the 5 teams who increased their rate of scoring touchdowns. But that's not exactly something that you want to bank on. Especially since New Orleans, throughout their amazing history with Drew Brees and Sean Payton, hadn't seen a rate of scoring like they had in 2018 ever before. And no, this doesn't mean that you should fade the Saints' offense this year. Regression doesn't mean avoid. Regression means don't expect the same thing that you saw before. At least bake that into your projections for an offense. Now, the 2 teams with the opposite problem in touchdowns per drive last year were Arizona and Jacksonville. To be honest with you, Arizona's kind of worthless to even discuss because everything is completely different for that offense. We're going to see one of the biggest swings in NFL history in plays run with the Cardinals from 2018 to 2019. They were already bound to regress positively a bit after having such poor touchdown numbers last year, but regression becomes more irrelevant when there are such massive changes. Like, nothing is the same in Arizona. So I felt like that's an important thing to at least share. Now, with Jacksonville, they finished last in the league last year in touchdowns per drive. Just 12.4% of their drives resulted in a score. Since 2011, we've got a sample of 13 teams who had that low of a touchdown rate. Of those 13, only one of them decreased their touchdown rate the following year. And the average increase was 5.8%. So if you were to add 5.8% to last year's total, Jacksonville would have gone from 22 touchdowns to 32 touchdowns. with Nick Foles under center, I think we can expect a pretty decent jump for that offense. It doesn't mean that there'll be this super relevant offense all of a sudden, but it does mean that we can feel a little bit more confident about guys like Leonard Fournette or Dede Westbrook. Now, that's all the touchdown-related analysis. I know I just threw a lot of stuff your way, but hopefully it all makes sense. There's also regression that happens with how teams call plays, or just plain old pass-to-rush attempt ratio. Last year, Pittsburgh and Green Bay led the league, or were first and second, in pass-to-rush attempt ratio. Pittsburgh was at 2.00, while Green Bay was at 1.92. So both teams were throwing nearly double the amount of passes as they were running. Since our 2011 mark, we don't really have a sample size of teams who have been this pass-heavy. The 2013 Falcons had a 2.05 pass-to-rush attempt ratio, but they're the only team above 2. But even if you look at the 18 teams who have next season data who had a ratio at or above 1.7, there's a clear trend. All but one of those teams saw a dip in ratio the following year. And on average, that drop was by about 0.33. That means we just naturally expect Green Bay to be closer to 1.6 next year and Pittsburgh at 1.7. That can and should absolutely change the way that you view some of these players, especially if you're just taking the volume from the previous season and associating it with the current season. And then, of course, there's the other side. Seattle and Tennessee were the two teams last year who finished with more runs than passes. Seattle actually had the third lowest pass-to-rush attempt ratio that we've seen since 2011. But even though both teams will still want to try to be pretty run-heavy and run the ball this season, we've got to expect some change. That change being an increase in pass attempts. There have been 28 teams since 2011 who have had a pass-to-rush attempt ratio at or below 1.00. So 28 teams, excluding last year's Seahawks and Titans, who finished the season with just as many rush attempts as pass attempts. Of those 28, only 3 of them saw their pass-to-rush attempt ratio decrease the following season, and the average increase was 0.23. Circling back to the discussion earlier, this is where things can actually help Russell Wilson. The problem is that they're still going to be pretty run-heavy, so they'll still likely be one of the teams ranked lowest in pass-to-rush attempt ratio next season. And with the regression coming in the touchdown column, that makes Russell Wilson not a very intriguing option. He doesn't have the upside that he once had. But I'll save that for the next podcast on negative regression candidates. That's going to be it for today's show. Thanks to all of you guys for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And feel free to follow me on Twitter for more fantasy takes, @LateRoundQB. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you later in the week.